From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Can a city be full, like filled to capacity?
Hi.
What's up? End of the line, please.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Look, we're at capacity, okay? We'll let some people in when it clears out a little. You get right in, you go back to end of the line.
We come here all the time. It's not a big deal. It doesn't really look that crowded in there.
Hey, look, I don't make the rules.
Please.
No. It is what it is, sweetie. Now, can you step to the back, please?
You don't need to call me sweetie.
Atlanta is bigger than a nightclub, but the line to get in is still pretty long. A new report says millions more will move to Atlanta by the year 2040. Can we handle all those new people and their cars? Today we'll talk about efforts to help the city grow sustainably, and we'll spend some time on how all the new faces have changed Atlanta culturally. And we want to know your Atlanta story. Here are your first thoughts.
This is Paolo from East Cobb. I've lived in Atlanta all my life. I grew up in Forest Park on the southern side of the city, and I actually left Atlanta for a time and came back. One difference that I'm seeing is that people are tending to stay in their area more. About 10, 15 years ago, before I left for the military, I lived in Henry County, but I would hang out in Midtown, hang out in Buckhead, hang out even in Alpharetta. I was all over the place. What I've seen now with traffic and the population boom is that people are tending to stay in their respective areas. Right now I live in East Cobb, and my wife and I barely venture outside during the week because of traffic and because of the overcrowding. And that's the one difference that I've seen. And I hope that city officials, both in Atlanta and the surrounding suburbs, are able to figure out how to solve that problem. Because if not, people are just gonna stay in their respective areas, and no one's going to explore the great city and see the gifts that we have.
We also polled our Twitter followers about when they moved to Atlanta. Nearly half said they've been here more than 5 years. About 17% came sometime between 2 and 5 years. That includes me. 9% within the past year, and 26% are like Paolo and say they've always lived here. You can take that poll as well. Conversation is a really important one, and we want to know what you think. So native or newcomer, call us and give us your thoughts at 404-500-9457. We're also on Twitter, of course. It's at OST Talk, or you can post to facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio, and we might feature your comments on the show. And Atlanta is growing, and it's growing fast, and it's been that way for a while, and it won't stop anytime soon. The Atlanta Regional Commission estimates that about 2.5 million more people will call a metro area home by 2040. Are we ready for that kind of growth? We all have our own opinions, but let's turn to an expert. Mike Alexander oversees the Commission's Center for Livable Communities, and he joins me yet again. Welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be back.
How do you reach that estimate to know how many people might move here?
We go through a long process with a seated committee of economists using one of the most sophisticated economic models in the world to generate those forecasts out to 2040. And we need those forecasts, just like you were mentioning, to help plan for all the infrastructure we're going to need to meet that growth that you just talked about, that additional 2.5 million people.
Great. So then let's talk about the list of infrastructure that we need. What is it?
It's a mixture of everything, right? So for us at the ARC, as the Regional Planning Agency for Transportation, we are putting together a comprehensive suite of projects in coordination with GDOT and our other planning partners like GRETA and our local governments to address that fundamental need. So that'll be things like our new managed lane program that GDOT is leading up. We have a transit program that's in the out years of this plan, in addition to new road capacity at the arterial and collector level. We program 961 more lane miles of arterial roads in this current plan, this plan we're calling the Atlanta Region's plan that we just adopted. So it's a mix of projects to try to get at that core need to help people with their mobility, which is really what we're after.
You used a number of acronyms there. I want to make sure everyone knows what they are. GDOT is the Georgia Department of Transportation. GRETA is the Georgia Regional Transportation Authority. Here's the thing, though. We don't have a very transit-friendly city. I mean, to a certain extent, we have We've seen traffic fatalities go up over the past 2 years. In fact, there was a 25% increase in the first quarter of 2015. It was on track to have more than 1,200 fatalities that last year. Our solution so far, because we can't get Metro agreement on public transit, has been to build more roads. Is that sustainable?
You know, again, I think the critical thing is to say, you know, we hope for a mix, right? We know critically that there are road projects that need to be done. The 400 at 285 interchange is a classic example of something we built almost 40 years ago, and it needs to be improved to meet that challenge. On the transit side, one of the things we're really excited about at the ARC is the fact that MARTA expanded, had its largest expansion in the last couple of years when Clayton County voted to join the MARTA system. So, in fact, we added another county to the MARTA system. So, yes, these are ongoing discussions right now about how to expand the transit system. And critically, that's about funding, right? Our plan has great projects in it. The thing for us to figure out is how best to fund that.
And does that have to come from the state legislature, the transportation bill? Well, it looks like maybe there's a sign of life. It might be resurrected in the Senate, but to all intents and purposes, it's probably done for this year. Is there another source of funding besides the state?
You know, without additional funding resources, the way we've got the transit programmed into our own plan is that it's in the out years of the plan, which means near 2040, right? And that's very much about funding and finding enough funding to do it. So if we could find additional resources, if additional resources were provided through the state legislature or our local governments did decide to fund it, that would move those projects up. That would allow us to go to the federal government and compete in a real way for additional funding through their programs.
But that's usually matching funding from the federal government.
Absolutely.
We have to come up with the money first.
We have to have matching funds to go compete at the national level. Absolutely.
When you look at the map of Metro Atlanta, where do you most need to build that kind of infrastructure? Where are the places that are growing and might grow over the next 10 or 20 years in a way that's not prepared?
Yeah, it's a mixture of not just where people live, but where people go to work. And we have to plan for both. And getting people to work is obviously a very high priority in our planning. The Managed Lane Program is a good example of that. And that Managed Lane Program, right, is will provide almost free flow speeds for Greta Express buses, which is really an effective transportation measure for us to bring people in to those core employment centers. And those employment centers we forecast to grow, especially up the 400 corridor. We're going to add a lot of jobs in that area as well. So getting core infrastructure there, places like Emory, which has been a large employment center for a very long time, is a critical focus for us.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about sustainability in Atlanta, especially considering that we're going to get millions more residents in the next 10 to 20 years. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think the Atlanta metro area needs in order to sustain more population influx? You can tweet us at OST Talk or join the conversation happening on Facebook. My guest is Mike Alexander. He's the director for the Center for Livable Communities at the Atlanta Regional Commission. You know, Mike, they did a pretty comprehensive study of the most sustainable cities in the world. And the United States did not make the top 10. In fact, we barely made the top 20 for most sustainable cities. Chicago came in at number 19, barely. And they've got the L, which I assume really helped them out, the L train. What is it? Are we not looking at other models to see how other urban areas are doing it?
I think we're constantly looking at other communities and using them to help us evaluate how we would like to grow as an ideal. I think one of the most interesting things for us, and that makes us a worldwide leader, is the work that we've been a partner with the City of Atlanta with on the Beltline, which I think is a beautiful example of a project that I think promotes that core idea of sustainability, where you're talking about a great potential transit system, great recreation opportunities, and development at I think appropriately scaled development so that people can, you know, get out of their cars, get to work, and a wide variety of different modes. So we are doing some really great planning. Our LCI program is critically focused on making our communities more walkable, and that program's been in existence for 17 years now, and we've allocated $500 million to help our communities become more walkable, more vibrant places where you don't necessarily need to use your car as much.
And yet to add 2.5, somewhere between 2 and 3 million people to the roads, I come in at somewhere between 5 and 5. That's when I'm driving on the roads in the 5 o'clock hour. So I don't hit a huge amount of traffic. But for people who are listening that are in their commute for somewhere between 20 and 45 minutes every day, I ask on their behalf, how do we fit 2 to 3 million more people on these roads?
Right. And it's the fundamental question. We know even with our plans that congestion will get worse. And we like to be very upfront about that. Our plans make that congestion less worse. Building these projects helps, right? And we know there's benefits there, but it will be more congested in the future. If we can find those opportunities to move some of these, especially these transit projects up, we know that can help in certain areas.
But that requires funding from the state government, or local government, which will then release funds from the federal government.
Right. And our local governments across the board have funded SPLOS for their own improvements for decades now. So they've been committed to that, and it's been great at the local level. I can't emphasize enough what the managed lanes will mean for commuters that do opt in to the express bus systems. As those come online, you'll be able to get to certain employment centers much easier than if you were in your car and you didn't want to pay the managed lane toll fees, which will be implemented once those projects are built.
So you would be hoping under that, and again, SPLOST stands for a Special Purpose Local Option Sales Tax.
Come work at the ARC now. You're ready.
Which is the way that a lot of people fund special projects like this, especially transportation. With managed lanes, what you're hoping is that people will drive to a commuter lot, park their car for the day, and get on the bus?
They will get on the bus. The bus will use those lanes. And those lanes will be congestion priced, right? And these are additional lanes.
Congestion priced?
Right. So when there's no congestion in the general purpose lanes, the cost of being in the managed lane will be dramatically less than if you try to get in those lanes at 5 o'clock when everybody's trying to get home, the price will go up. It varies. It varies.
What's the most I would pay?
I think, don't quote me on this, but on the I-85 managed lane, I think the max for if you use the whole system line is like $12 in the peak period. That's as high as it goes
it's
right
a,
now.
It's
but
okay,
I might
Mike,
be saying
I won't
that
tell
wrong.
Anybody.
Okay. But I call that the child care. If you need to go home and get your child, you opt into that lane, you get home quicker, use it that time.
Because $12 is a lot of money.
$12 is a lot of money. But again, it's to create that free flow condition. And that free flow condition in particular will benefit buses and those express buses that all of our local systems will be using.
That's Mike Alexander, director of the Center for Livable Communities at the Atlanta Regional Commission. We are not quite done with this conversation, so Mike, you're going to stick around, yeah?
I'm supposed to stick around, yes.
You are, and I know that many of you out there have comments and opinions, and you can send those to us by Twitter or Facebook, or just give us a call at 404-500-9457. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. There seems to be a mass influx of people moving to Atlanta. A new projection from the Atlanta Regional Commission shows we can expect 2.5 million more people over the next 25 years or so. But Atlanta has really been the top moving destination in the U.S. for the past 6 years. That's according to Penske Truck Rental. As Atlanta grows, who is feeling the growing pains? We've talked about some of the challenges that the city faces with Mike Alexander of the Atlanta Regional Commission. He is still with us. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Also joining us is Chris Leinberger. He's a fellow at the Brookings Institution and a professor at the George Washington University School of Business. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
We also have Bame Joyner with us. He's Creative Culture Curator with Center for Civic Innovation, which is based here in Atlanta. Hey, Bame.
Hello.
And Nick Sexton joins us as well, editor of Sustain Atlanta. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Celeste. Thanks so much for having me.
Chris, what kind of things do we look for? I was telling Mike that there was recently a list compiled of the top 50 most sustainable cities, and the U.S. did not do very well on that. So what are the things that we're looking for that make a city sustainable?
The most important thing by far is to build additional what's referred to as walkable urban places. Livable communities is also the term that you use down there. That's what the market wants. And we have found that walkable urban places, where you can get most of your daily needs met on foot or by transit or bike, are by far the most sustainable things one can do. It is the answer to climate change. It's the number one answer to climate change. And but importantly, it's what the market wants. And we've done a study of Atlanta, along with working in partnership with ARC, that demonstrated that you've turned the corner on sprawl in this real estate cycle, and that's one of the most positive things I've seen in my 30 years of studying Atlanta.
You mean we're not sprawling anymore?
You are turning the corner. So I'm not going to say that you are not sprawling anymore, but a majority of your new development is now walkable urban. And 20 years ago, that percentage was 10%. So it's been a major shift in this real estate cycle.
Mike, did you want to respond to that?
I would just want to emphasize that when we look at building permit numbers, over the last 50 years, our suburban counties have led. Since 2010, the city of Atlanta has done more residential construction than any other jurisdiction, more than Gwinnett County, Cobb County, our big suburban counties. And that speaks to what Chris is talking about exactly.
Nick, I think that walkable urban communities is not something that most people find in Metro Atlanta. When you are talking about a sustainable place, and as Chris mentioned, it needs to be walkable in order for that to happen, what do you see around Metro Atlanta?
Well, I mean, I think Chris has it right. Based on his numbers, there's more walkable communities being built throughout the region, but what's important is that those walkable communities also have to be connected with other communities via alternative modes of transportation. So unless we have additional transit nodes, people still need to get in their cars, they still need to get in the highways to commute to and from work or to and from those walkable communities. So really, to have a sustainable walkable community, it's not just that it has to be walkable, but you also have to be able to move around the region without using a car.
The other thing, and any of you can jump in on this, that makes it walkable and livable is that it has to be affordable. And there are issues in Atlanta, at least, where we've seen rents recently. Atlanta's long been known, and Georgia has long been known, as a place where rent is affordable, right? But rents here are rising much faster than wages, and we have a huge, possibly the worst problem with income inequality of any major city in the country. Bame or Nick, either of you want to weigh in on that?
When you guys were talking, I was wondering, livable and walkable for who? Atlanta, from our history, part of our brand has been the affordability. We've always kind of had this traffic issue and reliance upon cars, but now you also have millennials. We're in the top five for millennials to move to, so I don't know how much money they have, but I'm thinking around that age, you still are concerned with some form of affordability. So at times I wonder, with the number one in income inequality and a 4% upward mobility rate, who is this city for and who is moving here? I guess I'm asking you a question or throwing that question out.
Let me jump in there.
Chris, yeah.
Yeah, that yes. Basically, walkable urban sales prices and rents are literally twice the cost per square foot of drivable suburban right now in metropolitan Atlanta. We have the research that has shown that. So definitely there's a huge gap. It's literally twice the cost to rent or to buy a house or rent office space in a walkable urban place as in a drivable suburban. There are two reasons for that. One major reason is that you don't have enough walkable urban land. Those price premiums are driven by land prices. You have no shortage of land. You've been the fastest growing metropolitan area in the history of mankind. I've also proven that over the last 50 years. But you have not been building enough walkable urban land. So walkable urban land has spiked, causing those price premiums. That's number one. Number two is that you've become so dependent upon the car that 25% of your household income is now going to basically support your fleet of cars that each household must have. And if you drop one car out of your household, the AAA tells us it costs $9,200 per year, and that's after tax dollars. You drop it, one car out of your household, you can increase your mortgage capacity by $150,000. And that's an asset that appreciates in value. A car always depreciates. So shifting to walkable urban is going to solve this if we create more walkable urban land.
But Nick, one thing I've noticed, and I am not a native here, I've only been in Atlanta for a couple years, and here's something that I've noticed. The communities are not connected. I can't take a walk in my neighborhood because their streets, they have all these little sort of isolated communities where houses are grouped together, and none of the streets go through. Why is that?
Well, I mean, there's probably a number of reasons for that. I mean, I can think right now, just thinking of the Inman Park, Old Fourth Ward area, the reason why they don't go through is because they built Freedom Parkway, which completely segments that area. Could have been worse. It could have been a full freeway, but, you know, it's still highly segmented. As far as everything else goes, in terms of suburban development, you don't have the planning mentality of when that was built was to have sprawling, leafy suburbs and not to have complete streets. I think that's changing a little bit, and, you know, maybe someone else can address that, but it is just sort of an old school style of planning around the automobile where you didn't really consider that, you know, you might want to have streets that can handle pedestrian traffic, bicycle traffic, and get people through in various different means.
Mike, did you want to address that? Because, I mean, even some of the newer, and I live in Marietta at this point, even some of these newer communities, you'll turn off a street into a little housing community, and it's just all sort of isolated in its little bubble there. Why don't those streets connect?
Yeah, you know, it's absolutely true. When you look at street interconnectedness, this is a performance metric any local government can examine their own community. You're going to find that streets are not connected. A cul-de-sac has been a premium for most people in their location choice. They thought a cul-de-sac was safer, less traffic. But again, if you have 300 cul-de-sacs feeding one collector and that one collector feeds on one arterial, at certain times it's going to get very congested. Because you don't have a lot of opportunities to change direction.
No, and everyone's kind of trying to get on that same road. Chris, some of the things that people measured in terms of city sustainability, and I hope you can rank them in terms of importance. You've already talked about transportation infrastructure. Another thing that they mention in terms of sustainability is education and income inequality. How do those factor?
Well, our study looking at Atlanta showed that that Atlanta ranks in the middle of the largest 30 metros as far as your education, meaning the percentage of the people over 25 that have their college degree. We also showed that there's a direct correlation, high correlation, between walkable urban development in this country and that those places attracting a highly educated workforce and those metro areas having the highest GDP per capita.
Yeah.
And so if you want to get rich as a metropolitan area, this indicates that you better build what the market's demanding, walkable urban places. But at the same time, you must have a conscious, affordable housing strategy.
Yeah.
You can't just, you know, assume that the market's going to respond to all the pent-up demand for affordable housing as well.
If you're just joining us, you just heard Chris Lineberger, fellow at Brookings Institution, also teaches at George Washington U. Also, we're with Mike Alexander, the director of Center for Livable Communities at the Atlanta Regional Commission. Bame Joyner is the creative culture curator with the Center for Civic Innovation, and Nick Sexton edits the website Sustain Atlanta. And Bame, let's talk about what this means for Atlanta as a city. You mentioned Atlanta's brand before. How does all this influx, and especially people who are not natives, how does that change Atlanta's brand and Atlanta's culture?
Well, for years, and I guess I'm 37, native of Atlanta, from the West End community, but I was educated elementary through high school in Buckhead. I came out of North Atlanta High School in 1997. So I was able to witness Atlanta kind of being this town that masqueraded as a city in the late 80s and early 90s, going into the Braves, going from worst to first, and then Freaknik and the Olympics. And we kind of grew at that point, and we became, to some, I guess people would call it the Black Mecca at the time. And now it's morphing into a more of a Black cultural Mecca, but not many Black people still live in the city, in Atlanta proper, because due to the affordability, they're kind of fleeing the suburbs, and you just have Atlanta morphing again into another type of city, which is different from the city that had the Olympics. You outside of Centennial Park and a few other things, you can't even feel that type of vibe here anymore. So what we're shaping into, who knows? We are one of the top cities for millennials to move to. So it's more of, what do you think about millennials, and what do you think millennials like? And they like walkable communities. They don't like being in the car unless it's an Uber or a Lyft or something like that. They love this mixture of cultures. And so we've yet to take shape as we're still growing as a city, but this next generation, this next 20, 25 years, Atlanta has the ability to show what an efficient city looks like in the digital age of doing things, where the larger cities, the New Yorks and the LAs or Chicagos, they're a little more rooted in who they are. So we're still trying to find our identity. It's a gift and a curse at the same time.
Nick, what do you make of that gift and curse of a culture that doesn't seem to settle because of all the transitory people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably just general growing pains that every city is going to go through. I mean, Bam was right about the affordability. I'm reminded of a study done, I think, last year by Georgia Tech's Dan Immergluck, just analyzing the new rental properties coming online. And he showed that I think somewhere around 95% of what's coming up is luxury apartments, and that most census tracts in Atlanta have actually lost what he considered to be affordable units, which I think was $700 or $750 a month in rent. So it is a major problem. We're having a lot of housing
for a one-bedroom, $750 for a one-bedroom.
We're having a lot of units come online, but they're basically all luxury apartments,
which many people can't afford. We're nearly done on this conversation, but Chris, what needs to happen? We've talked a lot about the deficiencies that we have and possibly some of the strengths in terms of culture, especially. But what's our priority here?
Well, you've done one very important thing, and of course it was led by ARC, which is to get the proper zoning in a variety of different places through their livable communities program over the last 20 years. That's crucial to make it legal to build mixed-use walkable urban places. Number two is you've got to build out the rail transit and the bike infrastructure. That is absolutely critical. The Beltline is the most important rail transit project in this country. It is virtually every metro area in the country is going to have a belt line, just as they all have beltways, or what you call the perimeter. And everybody's going to have it. You're going to get there first. It's going to spark tens of billions of dollars of economic development real close in to the city. And then number three is that you need that conscious, affordable housing program.
Yeah.
So as Bain has said, that, I mean, we can't build golden ghettos.
Right.
We will have failed if we build golden ghettos.
Yeah. Chris Lineberger, fellow at the Brookings Institution. He teaches at the George Washington University School of Business. Mike Alexander, he's the director of the Center for Livable Communities at the Atlanta Regional Commission. Beam Joyner is the creative culture curator with the Center for Civic Innovation. And Nick Sexton edits the website Sustain Atlanta. Thanks so much to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Draw your destination.